Solitaire Rose Radio, Episode 23, an interview with Webbs Comics artist Jin Wicked. Jin Wicked is someone I have known for a long time. We met, we met over the interwebs, and I actually knew her before she was a webcomic artist, and we have been friends for an extremely long time. But I wanted to bring her on the podcast, not just because it's fun to sit and talk with your friends, and it's good to record that. I think it's important to do podcasts with people you know and people you don't, but also with people you know, because you know their story better. And you can kind of help them get their story out. And Solitaire Rose Radio, the solo podcast, is very much about stories. Everybody's got a story. And I think Jin's got a very interesting story about how she started as a webcomic artist and became quite popular and then sort of faded away. And now she's coming back, talking about how she does that, how she does webcomics, how she sees webcomics. We even get into the nuts and bolts of her drawing. It's a really good conversation, and I'm glad I was able to put it together. So here you go.
I thought you were going to do something first.
No, I record all that separately to go. I'm interviewing Jin Wicked, who obviously of the Southampton Wickeds.
Really?
You don't listen to anything I do.
I do, but you know, it's usually like 4 a.m. and I'm barely awake, so I kind of go into a trance when I'm inking or something. It's just soothing voices while I'm inking to keep me focused.
Yeah, it's either me or Art Bell, right?
I know Art Bell had a show, and he bailed on it after like 6 weeks.
He'd bailed again?
He did. It was kind of a big deal. He signed up with SiriusXM.
I know, I remember.
They
gave him his own channel.
He did his show for about 6 weeks, and I think he claimed that he was not happy with the streaming quality, with the accessibility, because you do have to pay for the Sirius subscription and all that. And he also, I think, was not happy with like the volume and quality of callers, since it's a subscription service. And also, it's been, you know, God, like years since he was regularly on the radio. There's not a lot of people who know who he is anymore. If they do, they're just like, oh yeah, that Art Bell guy. And I don't know, he didn't say so, but I think there was maybe a little ego bruising there, but he basically, like, bailed on his show after 6 weeks. And at that point, I was kind of like, yeah, fuck this guy. And so I canceled my Sirius subscription, and I don't even listen to, you know, I mean, I used to listen to Coast to Coast to kind of, it was kind of a sport making fun of George Norrie. But I don't even listen to that anymore. Since I was working, I usually wasn't up that late anymore. And now I am occasionally like turning it on when George Knapp is hosting, because I have him on Facebook. So if he's going to be hosting a show, you know, he'll say something ahead of time so you can tune in if you want. But rarely, you know, once every few weeks, I kind of just was, I'm done with the whole thing. He's got an entire forum of people that are waiting with bated breath in case his, or when his non-compete form contract expires in like September of next year.
Yeah.
It's like the guy's old. He's got, you know, a 25-year-old imported wife. And,
well, good for
and,
him.
A, and a baby. He just let the guy retire and leave him alone. But
wait, he's got a baby. How old is he?
I think he's in his 70s.
That's okay. That's just crazy.
You want to know what's really gross? When his wife passed away, he was still on the radio occasionally, and it was pretty emotional listening to him the night he came on to describe that what had happened and how she had died. And like 6 weeks later, he goes to the Philippines and marries this like 21-year-old girl that he met online.
Yeah, meeting people online and getting into a relationship with her. That's just crazy talk.
Well, the Philippines, I mean, this girl's, she's literally like 21. And the really gross part is that they got married, and so he comes on occasionally to guest host Coast to Coast AM, and so he would talk about her, people would call in, how her name, I forget her name already, Erin, I think. So when they got pregnant, they were on vacation somewhere in Asia, so they named the baby Asia. And we got to listen to him explain how the baby got its name multiple times on national radio. And so I'm sure this kid's going to be mortified once she's old enough to look up some of these broadcasts and learn, hey, you're named Asia because that's where your dad porked your mom. So, yeah.
Oh, it could be worse. It could be worse. No. No,
it could be a lot worse. She could be named, like, I don't know, Buick or something.
She could be named Back Room at the Iowa Bar.
Yeah. Stock Room in Kmart.
Now, I did. One of the times I drove down to visit my parents, I go through Iowa. I did stop at the place where supposedly Captain Kirk will be conceived.
Yeah, they have, like, a sign there or something.
Yes, they have a plaque.
I think I've seen, like, a big monument.
Well, they have that, but inside the bar, they have a plaque.
Okay.
This is where Captain Kirk will be conceived in the year. And it's, okay, well, I've seen it. I've seen it. I've been to Graceland, and now I can say I've seen that.
That's kind of how I felt about Mount Rushmore.
When I saw Mount Rushmore, it was the last family vacation, and we did all of South Dakota in a day. And we had spent 2.5 hours at Crazy Horse.
Did you go to Waldrug?
No. They thought I was joking when I said we desperately have to stop at Waldrug.
How could you miss it? We had billboards for like...
Oh, the billboard. That's why we wanted to go. But we went by and Dad said, oh, I thought you kids were joking. You can stop in there. You people are crazy. But we go to did you go to Crazy Horse?
I didn't.
This was in the early 80s, and you'd look, and it's like, well, I can almost see the outline of something. Here we are 30-some years later. I take a look at pictures of it, and oh, you can almost see the outline. They're not doing any work on it at all, are they? But when we got to Mount Rushmore, we got there a half hour before they closed. So we run up to where you take your pictures.
Right.
Take the pictures of the family and the park rangers are going, we'll be closing in 5 minutes. We'd run down and get out. So, yeah, that was our trip to Mount Rushmore. It's like, okay, smile. All right, back in the car.
It's pretty underwhelming. You see it in pictures, and it looks, and I'm sure it's big, but it's so far away. You know, you get up to, like, the observation area, and it's this little tiny thing off in the distance. You're like, oh, that's it.
It's not as underwhelming as Crazy Horse.
I don't even know what that is, really, so.
Go to the interwebs and look up Crazy Horse Memorial sometime, and you'll go, huh, they've been working on that for almost 60 years, and I see the vague outline of a human form.
All right.
But they've got the donations, and the gift shop, and we were there for 2 hours. It was a poor time management.
Should have gone to Waldrug.
By the time we're to the Badlands, it's dark. It's like almost 10, 11. We had been in the car since 7 a.m. We're going through the Badlands, and I swear my dad says, well, you know, if the sun was up and you could see something, you'd see how beautiful this area is.
The Badlands was the first time I saw a hill that was bigger than a freeway overpass.
So while all this is fun, you draw 2 web strips. And first, you need to clear something up for me. Are you still drawing on crap I drew on my lunch break?
I am.
Okay.
I skipped just being me when I originally started drawing it. I skipped a lot of spaces in the archive. I would have times when I didn't draw a comic, didn't update, so I was sick or whatever reason. I had taken a wall calendar, just some wall calendar that someone had given me, and wrote on Tuesdays and Thursdays the number of each comic strip on the date it would have belonged for an entire year. Probably two, I think. And so when I would make a comic and post it, it would get the number that it should have had if the archive okay. comics had been there instead of the actual number it was in sequence. So I occasionally get emails about this, and there's a little blurb on the front page of the site explaining it. There are the holes in the archive where there should have been comics. So the new comics that I'm making are dated to fill in those holes. So I know when it's finished, there's going to be some kind of jarring jumps in the art style, but it kind of is what it is. I want to finish it, put it all together as one book. It'll be 500 comics when it's finished. So that's why the new Lunch Break comics that are being posted have dates from 2007, 2008. They're actually new, but there were never comics posted on those original dates.
Okay. And you also do A Dollar Late and a Day Short.
Yes.
Now, what is the difference between the two strips?
I got a little burned out on Lunch Break at one point. The art style is very taxing. I was having trouble completing work at the time. Every time I've experimented with the art style within Lunch Break, I would get some complaints. There was a lot of, you know, displeasure. So I decided that it was better to just start a new comic with a different name, since I wanted to do a pretty dramatic shift in the art style and kind of start experimenting. And you can see when you go through the archive where I kind of started over playing with the new character design, and then that kind of evolved on its own over time. And now I'm kind of doing both comics in the Lunch Break style again.
Okay.
But they're basically the same thing. I think Dollar Late, because of the period in my life when I was drawing it, really struggling to finish anything. There's a lot more, I hate to say, but a lot more depressing content in that comic.
Here, read this. It's sad.
A little bit. It explores more of struggling with depression and trying to work, even though I wanted to, was having difficulty doing that. But it kind of now I'm kind of back where I was. I've been doing a lot better lately. So I found when I started making Archive Lunch Break comics again that I was really enjoying drawing the characters again and really, okay. really identifying more with the style of my character in Lunch Break. I mean, it's been so long. When I think of myself, I see myself as a cartoon character more than a person. So the angular design, you know, the Dollar Late characters were designed, especially my character, to look very fragile. It's very thin. The arms, the legs, they're kind of malleable. It's very wide-eyed. It was meant to look kind of vulnerable. But I think where I am now, I identify more with the look of the Lunch Break characters. So I'm kind of just like, well, it's my comic. I can do what I want. So I'm going ahead and going forward making new comics on Dollar Late with the Lunch Break style. And it's also a little bit easier on me doing both comics, trying to finish one and advance the other, to just do them, you know, so they're basically the same. The main okay. difference is just that one has three panels and one has four.
All right. Now, Crap I Drew on My Lunch Break is a very appropriate title, because you were working, was it at a framing shop when you started that?
I was. I'm a career picture framer. It's really kind of the only job that I've had with any regularity. And the very earliest strips were drawn with a Bic pen on a piece of computer paper for my hour lunch break at work. It almost started as kind of a joke. It was in 2003, So webcomics had been around for a little while, but it was still kind of in the early stages. You didn't have thousands upon thousands of them the way that you do now.
And most artists are doing at least some work digitally. Are you doing it all, you know, pen to paper, or are you doing some of it digitally? And how do you feel about the digital art kind of revolution where more and more people are drawing everything on their tablets and computers?
It's kind of a blend. Lunch Break and Dollar Late are both drawn on paper. Dollar Late's drawn on Bristol, which is a little heavier weight substrate. Lunch Break is drawn on just a recycled drawing paper. I like drawing on paper. I like being able to sell my original artwork. I like that there's something physical there. I get emails occasionally. A particular comic will, you know, kind of connect with someone for some reason, and I like that they can actually buy not just a print, but the actual artwork if they wanted to. Or sometimes if someone's in a comic, if I want to make a gift for someone, I'll just give them the artwork. But I do some digital work. It's mostly posted on my Tumblr. And anything that I do in color right now is digital. So I do sketch some stuff directly on the tablet. I use a Wacom Intuos 4. But typically, the comics especially, the artwork is inked. It's drawn on paper. And then I do scan it and take the tablet. If some of the lettering is kind of off or something's difficult to read, I'll kind of move things around a little bit or clean up where inking kind of got a little crazy, smooth things out. But it's not heavy editing. It's just kind of a light retouching, picking up mistakes, just kind of making everything look a little cleaner.
Yeah, one of the things about your art that's always been, it's been something that people love, but it's also something that held you back, is how you're very, very meticulous about it. About how long does it take from when you first put the pencil to the paper to when it's done and scanned and ready to go?
Including sketching, which I typically sketch on another piece of paper. I have just printouts with the boxes pre-drawn so that I can sketch the panels out to minimize erasing on the finished copy. So this is smoother and cleaner. So I sketch it out, I put it on a light box, trace it onto the Bristol or paper, then I pencil it again, ink it, erase the pencils, and then go over the ink with the final ink and cleaning it. That entire process takes, depending on the comic and how good of a time I have, how easy I'm having focusing that day, it typically takes 8 to 12 hours for each comic from very start until finish. So very occasionally I can finish a comic in one day. Usually it's kind of a do most of it and then clean it up and actually scan it the next morning kind of thing.
Okay. And one of the things about the strip is it's very autobiographical. And your work has always kind of been autobiographical. Even back when I first met you, most of your drawings were of you. Was this a conscious decision, or why did you choose to sort of use your art to talk about yourself?
I think I know that I was really troubled as a teenager. And I think I kind of used that to sort out my own issues. I'm not really into fiction. I don't watch a lot of movies, television. I don't read a lot of fiction books. So when I go to write something, I'm more looking at either taking, drawing something about current events, politics, or using kind of myself as a stand-in for hopefully other people to identify with. I know a lot of the stuff I've done pertaining to depression and anxiety, you know, I've had people tell me, hey, you know, that's how I feel, or, you know, thank you for putting this in a way that I can show it to other people and kind of help explain what I'm going through. So I don't think that it's, I don't think that it's necessarily me wanting to just make everything about myself. I'm just using myself as a stand-in to communicate because that's what I know. And I've also, like I said, used that to work through a lot of my own issues.
And one of the themes that kind of came through that I've noticed that people really gravitate to is that you keep pet rats.
I do. I have.
And I was, when you started drawing about that, I was fascinated at how it was almost like this collective head raise of people who do that kind of went, and turned in huge numbers.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure everyone with pet rats on the internet knows who I am by this point. Or maybe they used to and they've forgotten now, but definitely I'm pretty well known for the rat stuff. And I plan on hopefully starting to paint again at the beginning of the year. I'm going to be doing some paintings and some other stuff kind of working with the rat theme. You can just call me the rat lady, I guess.
There are worse things to be called.
There are worse things to be called. Rats are very, very sweet, very good pets.
And what was that like for you when all of a sudden here's this community that you may have known about or may not have known about, but they discover you and almost like stampede toward your work? Because your work is also very interactive. You talk a lot with your fans. You've got a, how's it pronounced? Patron or Patreon? Or?
I actually, before I called you today, I was trying to get find a consensus on how that's pronounced. I couldn't find one. So at the risk of sounding like an idiot, I'm going to say Patreon. That's how I've always said it. I heard someone on YouTube pronounce it Patreon, and I've also read that it was just pronounced Patron, which I don't know why they put an extra E in there unless they just needed a domain name.
Or, you know, they want to copyright the word.
Right, but I think most people pronounce it Patreon, and that's been a really great thing so far.
Now, why don't you explain a little about that? Because there are all these different funding things. I did an interview yesterday, which has been put up over the last couple of weeks with the people at 01 Publishing, and they had gone about, they did the traditional route of, you know, putting together a pitch, going to publishers, a publisher accepts it, you know, all of that, and then they went to Kickstarter with one of their new projects, and they were able to take, basically, the Kickstarter didn't just kickstart that book. It kickstarted them to do their own publishing company.
Right.
And one of the things they talked about was how during the 60 days, it was work the entire time. They were doing podcasts. They were doing interviews. They were sending press releases. They were, you know, going to conventions. They were handing things out. The people who said, oh, yeah, that's really cool, I'll sign up for it by the end, they would have to, okay, no, please sign up now. Please sign up now. And it almost that became the job.
Right.
But there's Indiegogo, there's GoFundMe, there's all of these different things. Why did you choose this one, and what's the thing about it that works so well for what you do?
So Kickstarter is great if you're trying to do something like publish a single book. So you have a clearly defined end goal. I'm making a movie. I'm making a book. I'm making a CD. I have some product that I want to produce. So there's a start and a finish. Patreon is for funding ongoing projects. So basically, when I wasn't updating often, it was funded per work, which many people that do YouTube videos where they produce maybe one or two works a month will do funding per work. Most comic artists, including myself, it's per month. So you would sign up for a Patreon account. You would decide what level you would like to fund the artist's work. You can give $1 a month, $5 a month, $10, as much as you like. Usually there are reward tiers for specific amounts. I have those. You get to see stuff before it's finished. You get to see stuff I'm working on. You get to participate in Skype chats. We have different reward tiers for however much you decide to contribute. Or you can just specify your own amount, but you're committing to pay that dollar or $5 or $10 a month. And what that does is enable someone like myself to know, you know, I'm making $500 this month. I'm probably going to get $500 next month. I might get a little more. I might get a little less, but most people will stick with you. And so it lets you know that you're going to have a certain amount of reliable income. And that stability is really important. It's difficult. It's difficult to do that kind of ongoing project like a web comic or a podcast, especially if it's something that requires a lot of time the way my comics do. You're working and basically not knowing if you're going to get paid anything or not. You know, you're doing it because you love it, but, you know, you also have to pay bills. And it's much more, it offers a stability to artists and a way to fund ongoing projects with no end differently than other sites like Indiegogo and Kickstarter.
One of the things that I've learned over the last few years is that when something new starts on the internet, like podcasting or web strips or something like that, a lot of ad money comes rushing in really fast until the advertisers kind of realize that, oh, wait a minute, we're not getting measurable results. And then the money rushes out of it. Did you try advertising? Did you look into advertising? Do you have some advertising horror stories? Because God knows I do.
I do have Google AdSense on my sites. I don't put a lot of ads because I don't like how disruptive they can be to the web design. And I don't want to do obnoxious things, you know, like throw banner ads in the middle of my blog posts or anything like that. So there is some very minimal advertising. I don't really make much money off of it. Back a few years ago, I did make enough to where it was a good supplemental income. It was never anything I was gonna survive off of, but I do think in the last few years particularly that web advertising has declined in general. I don't think that anyone makes as much money off of it now as they used to. If my Patreon did well enough and I felt like I could depend on it, I would probably remove the advertising entirely.
Okay. And how do you feel about advertising? Because I know that there are some artists who they see advertising as the enemy. There are others who, well, my strip exists to help sell ads. On a aesthetic level, how do you feel about advertising?
Like I said, I don't like that it's disruptive to the web design. I try to put it in a place where it's noticeable, but it's not, you know, it's not disrupting the content. But I don't really have any strong feelings about it one way or another. It's kind of, well, you know, some people may pitch me $5 once and never contribute again. Some people may occasionally buy artwork from me. Some people may sign up for my Patreon. The advertising is just kind of there for, you know, the person that comes by and they might go through my archive, you know, have a few hundred page views. They might click on an ad, but maybe they're not that interested or, you know, they can't afford anything. It's just kind of there to just kind of have like a bottom, to pick up a little more income at the bottom there. But I wouldn't be opposed to removing it if I thought, you know, that I would have a reliable income otherwise.
Okay. Now, when you look back at your early work, especially on Lunch Break, what do you see that you've gotten better at? Because I think everybody who's creative looks back on their old work and winces from time to time. What do you think that you've gotten much better at?
Oh, it's pretty awful. I really...
And for all the people who were fans of Jen's stuff in the beginning, I said, wow, she's really good. Yeah, she just kind of told you, no, you're
no.
wrong.
The character, the artwork's a lot tighter. and you look at the early strips, the characters are kind of all over the place. You know, their eyes are sliding around on their face. Nothing is consistent. And I think that happens with pretty much every comic, is you spend a while kind of settling into your style where things sort of gel together, and then they don't change so much after that point. But they do still usually change some, unless you go into like full zombie status like Garfield, where nothing ever changes. But
well, the people who draw that strip for Jim Davis are told how to draw the damn strip.
Right. And that's very different from someone that's just doing their own thing. And I think it will continue to change. I'm trying to keep things steady right now while I'm doing both comics. And then once lunch break is complete, I'll probably let Dollar Lake kind of go off in its own direction again and just see what happens. But I think mainly I wince at a lot of the early strips that are... It's not even really a comic. It's just like, oh, here's a thing I wanted to say, and I drew it in a box. there's no joke, or, you know, go check out this website, or here's this dumb political comic. I don't really do political comics so much anymore. But, you know, and I think that's always why it's kind of made me a little uncomfortable. I've spent since I started Dollar Late 2008, I've heard nothing but, I miss Lunch Break, which is basically the other half of that is, I don't like your new comics. So, you know, and I look...
That is something an artist can get trapped in.
It is.
If you do something good and you try to change anything...
Well, it doesn't even have to be good. I mean, just people get attached to things, so when you start slightly changing thing, they become upset. You know, and you see this all the time with TV shows and, you know, pretty much anything. You know, oh, I don't like the new Batman. You can't change anything. You know, and even like there are comics within the Lunch Break archive. There was a particular kind of a sub-style, the Happy Happy Rats, that are the kind of retro-looking characters
those are very... When you did those, it reminded me of when R. Crumb would jump into his... I always called it the 1890s style, because you've seen R. Crumb's work. It's very gritty and
right.
inky and kind of rubbery and dirty. But he would also draw this stuff that looked like it was from the 1890s, and it was dead on. You could put it next to advertising art from that time. And I don't know if you were a fan or you knew of his stuff, but the Happy Happy Rats was like, oh my God, R. Crumb might be dead because she's channeling that same sort of feel to it.
I had a lot of fun doing those, and I toyed with for a while the idea of giving them their own dedicated strip, but I could never come up with enough dedicated material to do that. But I mean, I would occasionally get, you know, email like, what is this? What is this you posted today? Why don't you draw your real art style, you lazy bitch? And so, you know, I think, you know, it's made me uncomfortable people have said, oh, I miss Lunch Break. And it's like, well, which part of it? Because if you start reading it from the beginning, it changes pretty dramatically just over the course of, you know, I think there's around 350 comics. And it's like you might be remembering the later stuff, the stuff towards the end. I think the high point for that comic was around 2005, maybe into 2006. It was around that point that I started having trouble updating regularly. But, you know, I think there's a little bit of rose-colored glasses there. And, you know, you get tired of drawing the same thing. You know, there needs to be some kind of experimentation there. So, and I've done a little bit of that with Dollar Late, too. But, you know, when you say, I miss this comic, it's like, well, which part are you talking about? So... I forgot the original question.
that's okay. That's how it goes. Now, you talked about how, in your mind, the peak was 2005, 2006. Was that, in your mind, artistically, or was it popularity-wise? Because I think, wasn't it around that time you started going to conventions as well?
That was popularity-wise. So the conventions that I went to, 2000, and I think the first may have been in 2005. We had some, there was a couple of smaller local conventions in Houston that I went to. And then we went to the larger conventions in Dallas for a couple of years. But I'd only went to conventions a handful of times. But that was kind of at the height of the popularity of the comic. There was a stretch of about 3 years where I made enough money to support myself. And then I had trouble updating regularly, and it kind of declined from there.
One of the things I've noticed when artists, especially it's, yeah, I am drawing this by myself, I'm doing it all myself, fans almost become angry when you're late, not understanding that, well, you don't realize that the art isn't all I do. And I think about the self-publishing boom in print comics, and I knew a lot of artists and creators back then who, people would get mad, your book is late, and they would say, look, the last thing I'm able to do is draw, because I have to talk to the printer, I have to deal with the billing, I have to do the shipping, I have to make sure the binding, I have to, you know, all of the business stuff. Then my own personal life, I have to feed myself, I have to bathe myself, I have to do this. After all that's done, then I get to sit down and draw. So when you're doing a web strip all by yourself, what are the things behind the scenes that people don't really see that you have to do?
I think it depends on the comic. For myself, there's not a lot, you know, depends.
Well, you do all your own web design.
I do.
And when you used to, at least, you would write it all in HTML. You wouldn't use any pre-made stuff. Is that still the case?
My sites are running off of WordPress with a plugin called ComicPress that kind of handles the archive and some different things. I still code. It's not really coding, but I still write out my designs just, you know, in Notepad++ as the editor I like, in HTML. Nothing on my site is very complicated. I don't know much like PHP or JavaScript. But that's something that once it's done, it's not something you have to spend a lot of time maintaining unless it breaks. Myself, the biggest time investment has always been making the actual comics, because they do take, you know, if I'm having a really good day, they would still take me pretty much all day with reasonable breaks to, you know, eat dinner, you know, walk around the house a little bit. So I don't.
How dare you eat? You should be drawing.
Right? And there's a little handcuff and a chain under the desk, or, you know, just strap me to the chair here so I can't get away.
I'm a huge fan of Jack Kirby, and one of the things that the more I learn, the more, yeah, he was drawing, what was it, between 40 and 60 pages a month from the late 50s into the mid to late 70s.
That's insane to me.
And his kids talked about how he would sleep, then he would get up and he would go and he would draw and he would draw and he would draw, and his wife would bring him stuff, you know, bring him food and everything, and he would draw, and he slept odd hours.
Right.
So he would go to sleep around 4 in the morning, and he would wake up around 11 or 12.
Yeah, that's pretty much my schedule.
But one of the things that's really fascinating about it was he had to maintain that, and he didn't take days off. You know, he had no weekend. And the way you describe it, and I remember hearing at the time people who were, well, she's missing her deadlines because she's lazy. And there are a lot of web strips where, if you look them up, it's, well, they don't update regularly because the artist is lazy. And I think people don't understand that, well, it's a job, And at your job that you go to in an office, you get vacation days, you get sick days. There are days you come into the office and you just kind of putz around for a while. You're not filling in numbers in that spreadsheet every day. So when you started to miss deadlines and stuff, how vicious was the reaction?
There was some, I know it's not unique to me. Occasionally, you know, someone will have donated $5 to you and, you know, you'll get the indignant email. I donated $5 to you 3 years ago. And how dare you miss your update this week? I'm never giving you money again. Or more often it's someone, you know, I'm not sure about other artists. I know some of them, you know, I have an archive. I've lost some of it to hard drive crashes, but you know, I have an archive with, you know, the emails from PayPal or whatever. And you'll get this angry email and run a search, using your mail client for this person's email address in the donation folder. And it's like, you've never paid a penny for this. You know, the sense of entitlement can be a little frustrating sometimes. But I mean, it wasn't too bad, and I don't want to make it sound like I was working 12-hour days, 7 days a week. This comic, Lunch Break, originally updated twice a week. So I would spend typically 20, 24 hours a week actually drawing the comic, posting it. I would spend a few hours a week packaging orders, maybe going to the post office once a week to ship artwork. I would spend a few hours a week answering email. So it does add up to a full-time job, but it's not all drawing, though I'm doing more of that now because I'm working on other stuff in addition to Lunch Break. I'm trying right now to post 2 comics a week, but you know, it can be vicious, but it's not like everyone is vicious. And my update schedule has never been one of the ones that was clockwork. It was, this comic will go up sometime on Tuesday, maybe yeah. Tuesday morning, maybe Tuesday night, could be Wednesday morning. It's never been kind of one of those set in stone type update schedules. So someone that updates, more on a clockwork, you know, this is up Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. every morning, they may have gotten a little worse reaction. But I know it does happen because I've heard it from other artists that I know.
One of the things I also remember is you kind of became part of the webcomic community. And I'm wondering, because to me, webcomics have faded a little bit, and part of it is, as you said, there are thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
Is there still a strong webcomic community, or has it just kind of... Well, I'll tell the story about the comic podcast community, whereas there was Comic Geek Speak, and they were one of the first ones. And if you... The people who listened to, like, the first 50 episodes all went and started their own podcast. And it seemed like a very tight-knit community, and people would appear on each other's shows, and it was all on one big message board. And then, as with most things, somebody got mad at somebody. So a bunch of people went over here and started their own community. And then it just kind of filtered out to where now I don't know of all the comic podcasts. And there are some that start, they do 7 episodes, and they go away, and you never hear about them. Has the same thing sort of happened with webcomics, because there doesn't seem to be the buzz anymore?
I think it's a lot more segmented than it used to be. Everybody's pretty busy just trying to survive, if that's what they do for their day job. Some of them, you know, a lot of them, myself included, you know, things happen, life gets in the way. So things have kind of declined. I don't think web traffic is quite what it used to be, in the sense that there's a lot of people who go on Facebook. They get all their content from their social media. They don't necessarily just surf around looking for web pages to read anymore. So to reach an audience now, you have to be very engaged, Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram. You have to be a lot more interactive.
Instagram, there's more than pictures of food on Instagram?
There are pictures of cats.
Oh, okay.
Cats. I don't have a cat, so there's only, you know, I mean, there's only a handful of pictures on my Instagram. I'm allergic to cats, so I'm not sure what I'm going to do about that. But, I mean.
Well, and the Snapchat, you know, I doubt anybody's promoting anything on them other than their underwear.
The only thing I know about Snapchat, we were at a party, and some friends of mine showed me a Snapchat, and they had used it to draw dicks on each other's faces.
Yep, that's pretty much it.
That's all I know about Snapchat. I don't have it installed on my phone. But I am still friends with many of the artists that I knew years ago. And there are still pockets of webcomic artists and authors that kind of work together and cross-promote each other's work. I think it's maybe less visible than it used to be because it's all kind of gone down into social networks. So you don't see there. Webcomic collectives were really a thing for a while, you know, where four or five webcomics would band together and then they'd have like an umbrella name for all their work and cross promote. And I don't know how much of that goes on anymore. And I also know that some artists have stopped going to conventions. I think it's a little more fragmented, a little more segmented than it used to be, but there's definitely still a little bit of the community. You know, I'm friends with Josh Lesnick, who does girly and a lot of porn, so don't look him up unless you're cool with porn. And
I warn people all the time about sites not to go to, like, for the love of God, and I'll say it again, people, do not go to Google, put in Lemon Party.
You should definitely look up Lemon Party. You should definitely, yeah.
And it is not a party that Liz Lemon is at.
And you know, I'm friends with Randy Milholland, who does Something Positive. So they're probably, James and Mel Grant that do Two Lumps, they're probably my closest friends in the webcomic community. There is still a little bit of the community there. It's not what it was, but I think it's still there.
The other thing I've noticed about webcomics is years ago, comic book publishers and other book publishers would go to webcomics and say, we want to publish your stuff. And I look, Dark Horse did a deal with Sinfest and Mega Tokyo, and there were some others, but I don't see those anymore. And you've talked about how you want to take Lunch Break and turn it into a big book,
right?
500 pages. Is there still that drive for, I want to take my comic and put it in print? Or are most of the webcomic people just saying, I'm just going to do webcomics, that's it?
I think there's still a lot of love for books. Books have always been a really good way. Even people who don't like to donate or maybe don't want to buy original artwork, you know, to frame and hang on their wall. People still really love books. And e-books have gotten more popular. I don't really know much about those. But my books were self-published on Lulu. So they're print on demand. They don't make the book until you order it. And I'm okay with that. You know, I would be open to going through a more traditional publisher, but, you know, I'm okay with self-publishing. And there are a lot of webcomic artists who they self-publish, but they actually order the books in bulk and have them printed, usually with a Kickstarter type deal where, you know, this is how much I need to publish the books. This is how many I need to sell, and then they have their incentives. And there's quite a few that have printed books that way.
And I have heard that there are some where we need $25,000 to print these, and they'll end up with, you know, ungodly amounts of money.
Yeah, that happened with, there's a furry comic called Two Kinds, and he was publishing his book, I don't remember what the final total was, but I think it was over $200,000.
I have heard horror stories about that, too, where the person is, their Kickstarter is too popular, and they can't fulfill all the orders because they're physically not able to stuff the books in the envelopes and get them out the door as fast as they need to. So webcomics seem to be almost like an iceberg where I know with the podcast I do, I get very, very little feedback from email and such. But when I look at the number of downloads, it's like for every one person who emails me, there are a few hundred who are downloading it. And did you feel the same way with the web strip, that there were people who just looked at it and didn't interact, but there were some people who wanted to interact all the time?
I used to get a lot of email. I don't anymore. I made my... Hey! Sorry, the rats are trying to kill each other. I made my
And that's all you have to do. You just have to go, hey, hey.
Yeah, they're looking at me like, what? Are you going to feed us? I made my email address a little more difficult to find. It's pretty easy to find me on all the social media accounts because I use the same name everywhere. But it wasn't the sole contributor by any means, but some of the negative, I hesitate to call it criticism because at times it just kind of seemed like abuse for abuse sake. But some of that kind of fed into the downward spiral where I stopped working. So I made myself, if you want to send me nasty emails, you have to work a little more for it now. So instead of just clicking a link, you have to look at an image and actually type out the email address. And I think that does discourage a certain number of people because you can't just cut and paste it, but.
And for the love of God, don't have comment sections.
No. I'm starting on YouTube now, and the first thing I did was disable comments for the videos. Nothing.
Oh God.
Never
yes.
Read the comments. Nothing good comes from comment sections, especially ones where you don't have to register. You can just type something in and hit enter.
I had a recent experience with that, and it leads to a question. I went into, it was a message board discussion type group, and it was, I used the name I always use, Solitaire Rose, and someone brought up about the NFL and what was going on in the NFL, and I said, what needs to happen is when people in whatever area it is break the law, you shouldn't cover it up. You shouldn't be spending ungodly amounts of money to cover up, you know, somebody who's abusive or somebody who's this or somebody who's this. And they looked at my name and they obviously thought I was a woman because I got over 100 comments about how some man needs to knock sense into me. And it just got worse from there.
Yeah.
And to the point where there were things that if I were a woman, I would have been locking the door and sitting at it with a shotgun, and if there was even a rattle on the doorknob, I would have just started firing. And there's a lot, I don't want to get into all of the internet weirdness, but was there ever a time when you had to deal with, well, you're a woman, so you can't be a good artist?
Let me preface any comments I make about comments sent to women or females with the fact that I do own a shotgun. I own multiple guns, as a matter of fact, so let's just put that out there. There was a little bit. I think there's something about me, and I couldn't tell you what that is, but even in real life, I don't get a lot of the behavior that some women do, and I'm not saying that it doesn't happen, I'm just saying that it hasn't happened to me a lot. I'm fairly aggressive. I guess I maybe look a little scary, so, you know, I...
Well, in your name.
Well, you know, but I mean...
That's not the name that someone who's going to be handing out flowers is going to have.
But, you know, I mean, even though I'm out grocery shopping, like, you know, somebody's, oh, this creep at the grocery store was hitting on me in line. It's like, yeah, that kind of stuff doesn't happen to me. So I don't know what that says about me, but.
Well, I will say this. I've known you for quite some time, and I hope you take this in the positive way it's intended. You are one tough broad.
But there was a little.
You do. You come across as someone who does not suffer fools lightly and doesn't put up with
I
crap.
have a very low tolerance for bullshit, and I will not hesitate to let you know. But there was a little bit of it. It's not so much, oh, you're a woman, you can't draw, or you can't make comics. It was more along the lines of, how dare you post pictures of yourself? If you're a female, promoting yourself is not, it's not just promotion, it's attention whoring. So there's a lot of loaded terms in that way. Again, in addition to some of the emails I got, there were people online who were disparaging my appearance, photos of me that were the happiest I've ever been with how I looked, saying it looked like I had fetal alcohol syndrome, really nasty comments. And at the time, I wasn't in a mental place where I could handle that. Yeah, I'm in a very different place now. I kind of realize, like, what kind of person sits around on the internet to just post pictures of, people? It's like you kind of an internet joke. You post a picture of a model. It's like, oh, her elbows look really sharp. 2 out of 10 would not bang. But I mean, there was some of that. There was some of that, the kind of insults and comments that you get that you wouldn't get if you were a man. I get called Jim Wicked a lot, so
Oh.
I'm not sure, like, in some cases that people knew, I was female, but that's okay. I'm okay with that. Either way. But I did get some of it, but it's not nearly as bad as it has been. And given the light of recent conversations and vitriol and how riled up everyone is right now, I would like to again remind everyone that I do not bear arms.
So you've got these art projects going, and you've talked about how you're getting back to painting. When you look back over all of the art you've done, and if people go to the Google, and I like saying it that way because it makes me imagine I'm my grandmother, the first art that comes up is not comic strip art. I'm going to click on it now. You've got a Alan Turing. You got a piece of Alan Turing art.
Yes.
And I don't know, it looks like something from a Grateful Dead album cover here. But if you look over the art you've done, and you were to pick out the five things that you're most proud of, what would those five things be?
That's a tough question.
Of course it is. We ask the tough questions here.
I was promised this would be a fluff interview.
No, you were promised there would be no math, and that was a lie as well.
Oh. I would say the Alan Turing piece is definitely of a non-comic work that has gotten around. It's been published in several academic publications. It was published in the Japan Times, which is the large English language newspaper in Japan, with an article by Andrew Hodge about Alan Turing. There are some of the paintings that I'm partial to. It's not something that is on my website, and it's not necessarily something I think you could find by Google, so I'm kind of hesitant to talk about, oh, here's this, let me describe this painting you'll probably never see. But there was some early work I did where I almost kind of wasn't even really conscious of what I was doing. I was just kind of in a zone and just painting. And that's very cathartic to do. But I don't really, other than the Turing piece, I really don't know that I have anything I'm particularly proud of. Maybe I'm just made of shame.
Well, you don't need to be made of shame. You can be, you know, it's your choice.
Yeah.
If you look over the strips, and you've said that there are some where you just kind of cringe, I've known a number of artists who will go back and kind of erase their past. How hard is it for you not to do that?
With the comics, it's not difficult. It is what it is. I've known some artists, they go through and try to just redraw the older strips.
We call that George Lucasing.
I don't think the written material warrants the effort of redrawing it. Like I said, a lot of it's pretty bad. It is what it is. When I put the book together, you know, I write commentary for each strip and I kind of talk about maybe this is what I like or don't like, or this is what I might change if I did this now, or in some cases I would never have done this if I could go back. But with the comics, I don't really have that problem. I do in other areas, and I did have a problem with rewriting the books. That's why I don't have any available now. I kept going back and just, I got stuck in a cycle of just editing everything continually. But with the actual comics themselves, I mean, they've been out there so long, the internet never forgets. So
that's something no one seems to realize.
There's no point in trying to say, you know, oh, this never happened. You know, I am planning, I have a Facebook page where I post stupid rat pictures. I have been posting all the old rat comics there.
Okay.
And once that's complete, once those have all been posted, I've been posting them as a Throwback Thursdays on Facebook. Once that's finished, I'm going to be going through on my business page, which is Hi-Hat Studios. I'm going to be kind of doing a best of Lunch Break. So I'm going to be going through the Lunch Break archive from the beginning and posting all my favorite comics, the most popular comics, as Throwback
Thursdays.
Now, here's
my question. That brings up a beautiful question. Are your favorites the most popular?
In a lot of cases, yes, but not always. Especially with the Dollar Late, that comic just kind of never caught on. I think it was important that I made it and that I worked through those issues. But there's a lot of stuff in there I like that just I don't think anybody else did. But with the Lunch Break, yeah, a lot of my favorite ones are the ones that were also the most popular. But, you know, when you post something and then immediately start getting emails and comments and everyone's excited, it's hard for that to not be your favorite because you kind of associate the comic with the positive reaction you got to it.
So much like how you train rats, people can almost train an artist.
You can, especially with money.
Yes.
Especially with dollars. Ooh, a dollar. Let me do that again.
Was there ever a time when you put out a strip and you thought, this, people will love this? And you did. You got the crickets.
Yeah, that's happened a few times. I guess I can have a pretty odd sense of humor. I would say around the high point of the comic, around the 2005-2006, that didn't happen so much. It happened more as things started to taper off. And so it's hard to differentiate, did this comic just not go over the way I thought it did, or is it because nobody cares who I am anymore?
Okay.
And, you know, there have been some of them, some of the newer comics that I've done that I think are pretty strong, and they haven't quite gotten the reaction that maybe I hoped for, but I'm also being very patient because I know that I haven't been working for a long time, and I know I've had several false starts, so I'm sure there are a lot of people that are like, oh, you know, she's going to make 5 comics and then disappear again. Though it feels very different this time, which is why I'm kind of easing into it and putting a little more effort into carefully promoting things and not trying to overdo it. You know, I'm not trying to make a huge fuss right out of the gate.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I ask a lot of artists when they're on are about their influences. And I remember back years and years and years ago when I would ask you about this, you would brush me off as, I have no influences. Now that you're a little older and a little calmer and less apt to bite my head off, do you have artistic influences? Do you have people who maybe you don't draw like them, but you look at what they do and you try and take pieces of that, or artists you look at and you go, oh, I like that. I like that style. I want to ink a little more like this person. Is there anybody like that that you look at and you go, wow, that's the stuff I like?
I'm a really visual person, so I do have a few. But I also kind of would say I take influences from, like, everything. So when I was a kid, there wasn't a particular comic or artist I was super into. But I read the comics page in the newspaper every day. Pretty much everything but, like, the superhero and soap opera strips. So, you know, all the ones everyone loves, Farside, Calvin and Hobbes. For some reason, as a kid, I was obsessed with Mother Goose and Grimm, which is just... terrible puns if you read it now. But it was hilarious when I was like 7.
Well, when you're a kid, puns are brilliant.
Right. And when I was a little older, the only comic book I was ever really into was Poison Elves, which I would say probably had a little bit of influence, maybe more than I'm giving it credit for on my inking. I was fortunate in that I did briefly get to talk to Drew Hayes for a little bit and interact with him before he passed away. Also, when I was in high school, towards graduating high school, I was dating someone that worked in a comic shop. We frequently played Magic the Gathering. This was in the early days of the internet before, you know, everybody had internet. It was in the days of AOL, which there are probably people listening to this that have never heard of AOL.
And back then it was people who, there's a girl on the internet,
right? There was I was fortunate to know very kind of confused and kind of trying to figure out who I was very fortunate to know a few of the magic artists I really admired, in particular Tony DiTerlizzi and Douglas Schuller, who were very generous and kind to kind of talk shop, and both of them, you know, sent me things through the mail. That really had a positive impact on me. And I wouldn't say, I don't know how much their art styles have influenced me, but certainly the way that they interacted with their fans and were so generous really made an impression on me. And more recently, I kind of have an internet crush on Tim Kreider, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with his work, but he's done a comic in the past called The Pain. His art style is very kind of grotesquely realistic.
Okay.
I particularly love his portrayals of himself. It's kind of almost melty. The chin's kind of dripping down their necks, and I just really like his style of artwork. The only comics I read currently are Berserk, which is a manga, and Battle Angel Alita. I'm not really into manga, but those particular two really struck a chord with me, so I do read those. And I would say more than the art style, I do kind of look at the inking and think, this is something that I could do differently, to try to learn from it. And then, of course, you subconsciously absorb things from, you know, cartoons, animated films, like anything visual art, you know, you absorb a little bit of that, even on a subconscious level.
One of the things in comics that I'm finding very fascinating is a lot of people who worked in comic books who are moving to digital are playing with the form. Mark Waid's Thrill Bent stuff, it fills a tablet page, and when you click to the next page, it may not be a completely different page. It may be one character moved, or the word balloons changed, or things are slightly different. So that while it may be a 17-page comic, the artist doesn't have to do all of that. But I've noticed that most web strips, especially the ones that have been around for a long time, they still use that same format as newspaper strips. Are you ever tempted to say, well, this is the internet, I can do something different? Or do you like having the boundaries so that you can play inside the boundaries?
I think I'm pretty married to the kind of traditional, here's my box, I'm going to draw my picture in this box.
Okay.
I don't do a lot of digital work, so I don't know how well my style of art would lend itself to, you know, trying to do the more experimental, you know, animating. I've seen ones where, you know, the last panel of the comic is an animated GIF, so, you know, something's moving. And I like that kind of stuff when I see it. It's just not something I'm really interested in making myself.
Well, let's look out 5 years from now. Because in every job interview, they say, where do you see yourself in 5 years? So as an artist, you've talked about you're always wanting to change, but you're a little, sometimes the audience doesn't want to come with you. If the audience went with you and you didn't have to worry about that, where would you see what you're doing, what sort of work you're doing 5 years from now? What are you building toward?
I think right now, my biggest goal that I want to achieve is just to finish Lunch Break. I've gotten weighed down in the past from over-planning, from trying to do too much. So I've kind of got a little bit of tunnel vision going on right now. I want to start painting again, start doing just independent illustrations like I used to do. I want to continue updating Dollar Late, but kind of my tunnel vision objective right now is just to finish Lunch Break, to finish the missing comics from the archive, to finish the book, to have it available so I can say I finished something. I'm trying to not overwhelm myself with, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do this. In the past, that's what I've always done. I make really big plans and it just becomes overwhelming. You kind of see, like, there's no way I can do all this, and it paralyzes you, so you can't get anything done. So, I mean, right now the objective is to just hopefully be able to eventually reach a point where I can make enough money that I'm able to work on my comics full-time, which would enable me to finish at least one Lunch Break comic a week. At some point, I will begin writing on the book and assembling that. If I was able to do that sometime soon, then Lunch Break would probably be finished within about 3 years. So before I'm 40, that would be good.
Okay.
God, that sounds old. I know I used to ask you, what's it like being old? Now I can say very knowledgeably that it sucks. I'm starting to look like someone who has spent most of their life sitting up all night drawing comics in front of the computer. You can leave that in if you want.
Trust me, you don't look as bad as there. If you look there, Wally Wood, I'm going to throw Wally Wood right under the bus because he did it to himself. He was a guy, beautiful artist. If you look for some of his art, when he cared about his art, it was beautiful. But he was also the guy who, well, if you can swipe, do that. If you can trace, do that. If you can cut and paste, do that. But he, in his 40s, looked like a guy who'd been smoking cigarettes and drinking hard liquor his whole life. And that's the thing, what you do in your life, sort of, it starts to stack up.
I'm reaching the age where I've started desperately purchasing overpriced eye creams to undo a lifetime of staring at the computer until 5 in the morning every day, never going into the sun.
Well, the sun is bad.
Yeah, the sun is bad, but not enough sun, you wind up translucent.
Well, there's that, too.
There's that, so, I mean, there's a balance to be struck there.
I have had female friends who, they will get very sad if the sun's not out, and they need the sun on their skin every few days. And I'm more like, I'd be happy if it were rainy and cloudy all the time, mostly because I was working overnights, and it meant it was easier to sleep. But I still, when I go outside, maybe it's from 2 years of doing overnights, I step outside, and it's, oh, it's so damn bright.
Oh, no, I don't care for the sun. I much prefer to be overcast or raining.
And yet you live in a place where the sun is out a lot and it's like 90.
I would love to leave. That's my other 5-year plan is
move to Seattle.
God, can we move somewhere else that's not 105 degrees with 90% humidity 10 months out of the year? It sucks.
I was so happy this year it only got above 90 once.
Shut up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have to, because my friend who's in Germany right now, it only got above 30 a few times.
30?
Celsius.
Yes. Moon units.
Well, I think that, unless you have more to add, I think that brings us to the time for plugs. When I interview people, I love getting their stories. Everybody has a story, and everybody's story is interesting. But they don't come on here for their health, ladies and gentlemen. They come on here because they want you, the listener, to go and look at stuff and buy things. And what did you say earlier about feedback?
Nice feedback only, please.
Well, no, you said something about if you want an artist to do something.
You should give them dollars.
Yes. So, plug away!
You can find all of my work by going to my website, is shinwicked.com. I'm working on a new front page. I know there's just text links there right now. I'll get there. But there are links to my comics, what will be my art site once that gallery is back up, my personal blog. I have a store on Etsy where you can purchase my original artwork, along with some other crafty type things. The best way to follow all of my work, including the archive Lunch Break comics, which don't appear on the front page of that site, is to both friend me on Facebook and like my business page. Facebook's newsfeed algorithm will sometimes not show you everything that's posted. So by doing both, you're ensuring that you'll actually see when I post a new comic. I do also use Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, but Facebook is where I spend the most time. Everything important gets cross-posted to Facebook. So if you add me on Facebook, you're guaranteed to see everything. There are also RSS feeds, if you prefer. There's a drop-down menu on the top bar on my site with links to, you can either subscribe to everything, or you can choose which sites kind of a la carte, which comics or artwork or my blog, whichever parts that you'd like to subscribe to.
And don't forget, she does have the Patreon site as well.
I do have the Patreon. It's linked in the sidebar on all of my main websites. You can either make a monthly or a one-time contribution with PayPal, if you're more comfortable with that, or you can sign up with Patreon. At different tiers, you'll get to see either comics before they're posted on the public website, preliminary sketches for stuff I'm working on, game night chats, and at a certain tier, you can even appear as a background character in one of my comics.
And there you go.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
I would like to say that we continued our personal conversation for quite some time afterward. So it was good to just sit and chat with Jen, which I haven't done in ages. There's a lot coming up on Solitaire Rose Radio over the next few weeks. You've noticed that there are more episodes coming than there have been in a while. I will be dropping a Doctor Who episode next week, and then we're going to get back to the Kirby, the life of Jack Kirby, and we're going to start diving into the EC podcast. So, a lot coming up. But, so if you have suggestions, feedback, or ideas, please email me at corey.strode@gmail.com. Feedback is the lifeblood of podcasting. We crave it because it helps us know that you like what we're doing. Or, conversely, if there's something that you would like me to do in the solo podcast or in the Crazy Comics and Stories podcast, let me know. We appreciate all feedback. You know who else we appreciate? These guys, our sponsors. Sponsor number one is, as always, DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the web host that I use for both Solitaire Rose Radio and Crazy Comics and Stories and all the other internet stuff I do. And if you use the code CRAYZ, K-R-A-Y-Z, you get $20 off your first year. That's DreamHost.com. Graze.com is wonderful snacks that get delivered to you either bi-weekly or now every week. All you have to do is go to Graze.com, put in the code CORYS3R5P, that's CORYS3R5P, and you get your first and fifth box free. If you're listening to this podcast, you're one of the smartest people on the interwebs. And you're probably pretty fed up for overpaying for razors. I was, so I joined Dollar Shave Club. They deliver great blades to me every month for just a few bucks. No more schlepping to the drugstore. No more overpriced, ridiculous shave tech I don't need. Razor plans start at just $3 a month. Check it out and let me know what you think. And if you use this code, dollarshaveclub.com/crazy, you'll be helping out the podcast a little bit. Speaking of helping out the podcast, if you'd like to leave a message, you can call us at 952-856-0519. Now, if you're listening to this and saying to yourself, I'd like to advertise on this podcast, you can. Just email me at corey.strode@gmail.com, subject advertising. Once again, I'd like to thank you for listening. Go visit Jen's links. I think you will waste a lot of your employer's time going through her archives and reading the strips. Most of them are really funny, but there are also some that are fairly serious and really get into some deeper issues. It's a nice mix of comedy and autobiographical work. Thanks for listening, and remember, like I say every week, everybody's got a story, and that's what we're here to talk about.